This is Drew Ulrich interviewing Mr. Frank Van Auken at his home, 119 Facet Street, East Road. Springfield, New York.
Road, not street.
For the Cooperstown Graduate Program, Community Stories Project on Friday, November 16th, 2012. Mr. Van Auken, could you please describe for me what it was like growing up on this property?
Well, I'd imagine it was just about the same as any place back in those days. That's kind of a stumping question.
Well, just tell me about, you know, how it was growing up in this house you were born in. Just tell me what that was like.
Well, I don't know if I've got any way to really compare it to.
So what kind of chores did you do? What kind of activities?
We had a few cows, and we used to, my father milked them, and I helped get the hay and the grain, and I used to help feed them and clean them. Yeah, I don't know.
So they provide you a lot of milk, a lot of accessories
on the farm? Well, they gave us all the milk. We used to make butter with them. We used to make cottage cheese, or Dutch cheese. We called it back in those days. Today they call it cottage cheese, but it isn't much of anything but garbage. And we had our own gardens. We had our own orchards. We had our own meat. We were more or less self-sufficient. This is during the 1929 crash there, when it was that's what I can't remember things too much. But during Prohibition, I was born Prohibition too, but this was something to do with the stock market crash when everything went to pieces back in those days. And we got along, I think we got along very well. We didn't have to go out on the street and sell apples or anything like that. You know what I mean? I think I had a pretty good childhood compared to some. I look back onto it. We were provided. We didn't have it. We didn't have to worry about food. Of course, you're 10 or 15 years, 10 years old, that's about all you think about is food. No, I guess that's about it.
So could you tell me about the process of making the cheese and the different dairy products?
Well, I don't know. My mother knew more about that than I do. Did the butter, they used to... we had a separator, a milk separator, and with the cream, we took the cream off, and they checked that, or she did, till it was a right... they had to sour somehow. And then we had a butter churn, what we call a churn. This is what we have. A lot of them have one that rolled over, but this was a one with a dasher into it. And we get it down to a certain coolness, put it in there, and it wouldn't take very long, and there'd be butter in there, and you had a buttermilk, regular buttermilk out of it. The cheese, that was made from skim milk, and that soured. Somehow they heated it on the stove to a certain, you had to have it just right, or if you didn't, it would be too hard, the curds would be too hard. But they knew how to do it. If they did get too hard, my grandmother, she... done something to it, and she rolled it up into a ball about like that, and I'm going to say four or five inches in diameter, and rubbed butter on the outside of it and put it up in the, what we call the pantry, laid up on a shelf there. I never ate the stuff. It stunk like a son of a gun, but they liked it, so.
So it wasn't for, like, commercial sale? It was just
No. We never sold any of that stuff. That was,
or gave it away?
Well, somebody wanted it, maybe. She sold the butter. That was sour cream butter, salt butter. You don't buy that too much anymore. It's mostly this sweet cream butter. But you don't buy that. You can't. Well, yeah, I suppose you could get it some places. A specialty. It would be a specialty nowadays. But that's about it.
So you could tell me about the history of this house you lived in, that you grew up in as well?
Well, I understand it must have been built, that part in there, it's post and beam, what they call post and beam. I'd imagine that was built around, in 1840, somewhere in there. It's an old house, it's a real old house. And then this here is frame, this part here, that was built on a long time afterwards. So,
did you or your father put on any additions to the house?
No, this was all before we even moved in. No, this was all done. The only thing we've done is remodel the inside of it, fix it up. I've made it over. That was the pantry I'm talking about will be over there where the refrigerator is now. It wasn't very big, maybe 5 by 6, something like that, you know. And there was a bedroom in there, right where that part is. This was a partition, a solid partition up here. And this side where we are, the cook stove was in there. They had the big cook stove, where it kept you warm all winter long when, you know, it changed a lot since then. Things have.
Definitely.
No electricity.
Really? How was that? How was that like?
No electricity till 1929. They come in and they run the line in. We were about the first to get electricity because one of the fellows, he was an electrician and he worked for this guy. And they had a little pull with the electric company, and they put that in. No, we had lamps in the living room in there. They had some kind of a lamp that had mantles in it, you know, mm-hmm. like a mantle lantern, and you get pretty good bright light with that. But then they out here they had just plain old kerosene lamps. Something like that. And they burnt wood in the stove. That's where they got the heat. They have to go up in the woods and cut a whole lot of wood and come down and have somebody come in and buzz it up for you in the right length they wanted. And then I got the job of splitting it. And I didn't like that. Somewhat was pretty tough, but that was, we didn't do too much running around. I had to work. When I come home from school, I had to go get things straightened up for get the cow straightened up, and I didn't play ball or stuff like that, you know. That was for the town people to do.
So, what was it like when electricity was brought to this house, if you recall?
Well, let's see. I think we had a light there, a lot different than this one. They had another light in there. three bulbs in that thing. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It was different. Yeah. We didn't get a refrigerator till in the 50s, I guess it was, in there. I don't really know how they kept stuff. I think they canned it all, you know, so it didn't spoil.
Did they keep it in the pantry here?
No, there's a cellar down in what we call a cellar. That's the basement. Nowadays they call it a basement, but that was a cellar down there. And they had shelves down in there, and they put all this onto it. And they also picked the apples in the fall, and that went down in a shelves like or bins down in there. And that and the potatoes and all this root stock, you know, what they were put down in there. And it didn't rot too much. You know how to take care of it. It wouldn't spoil too fast. The canned goods never spoiled, but you get like potatoes and carrots and onions and that stuff. And apples. Apples were hard to keep because if one started, then all the rest of them would go most after a while. As the guy says, we started eating up the apples that were rotting, and as a result, we ate rotten apples all winter long. But, they make them up in applesauce and pears, canned pears, canned cherries, canned plums. All that stuff was in cans. And that stayed good. There wasn't anything wrong with that. And they canned meat. They take get a quarter of beef and cut it all up in chunks and put it in 2-quart glass jars, I guess it was, and put it in a hot water bath and heat it all up, cook it in that, and then snap the lid down, and it would stay all right. You never had anything go in that.
Never mind. Wow. So, could you tell me about your high school?
Well, I went to school right down here in East Springfield. I went through school, high school. I haven't been to college or anything, excepting the one of Hard Knocks and also the United States Army. But they didn't. When I first went down there, all they had was, they had high school there, but there was no gymnasium or anything else. They built that on. Well, I sat there and watched them out of the window upstairs. We had good teachers. But if you do have good teachers, you got to do some of it yourself. So, I don't know. It was okay. I got along all right. No trouble. No bullying like they have today. They had a little boxing match downstairs, maybe. But they have gymnasiums now, and all cleaned up and nice. And when we played, we had to play down in the cellar, what I call the cellar around the furnaces, and they holler about asbestos. Well, hell, everything was covered with asbestos in those days, and the dust is flying all over. Oh, boy, today you don't want to get a bit of it, or it'll kill you, but I was in a lot of it for a long time. I didn't die.
Sounds dangerous. Wow.
You know what I mean? Otherwise, no, they built that in, I don't know, 1930s, I guess it was, somewhere around there. I graduated in 1939. Yeah, that was it. And then I played around here, monkeyed around here, and then after a while they started a defense course over in Richfield. And I went to that, and next thing I knew they came up and they wanted me to go to the Remington Arms to work. So I went down to the Remington Arms and I went to work there. That was a good deal. But Uncle Sam needed me, so I done what they wanted me to do when I went in.
So could you tell me, so I come from a military family, could you describe for me how you felt when you were inducted or drafted into the armed forces?
I didn't know a damn thing what I was doing, where I was going or anything else. You from a military family?
I am.
I'm not, it was a good experience, let's say. But I'm not a guy that likes to be told what to do. You know what I mean? And that in there, that's what they tell you to do. And the chain of command is a chain of command. I always thought that was what it was. If you wanted anything, you didn't go to the captain or anything else and ask him. I went to the, I had a master sergeant over me, and that's who I spoke to if I wanted something. I always got it, but at least I had to do with the commissioned officers. To me, that was the least, that's the best thing I want. I didn't want anything to do with them because I don't know why I never thought very much of them.
Well, why was that?
I don't know. I just had that idea. I don't know. I had that idea. They were all right. Nothing wrong with them, I guess. Of course, I don't know whether they knew what they were doing either. I don't think Eisenhower knew what he was doing. But if it hadn't been for the men on the front line, Hitler would have this outfit. Or the Germans would have it. This SS would be the... That's my opinion. I don't know. I'm not a very brilliant man.
So could you tell me about some of your induction and the training you did?
Well, yeah. They inducted me. They took me in up in Utica because I was working there in the arms in 409 in Ilion. And I was inducted in Ilion, or up in Utica. I guess you swore in or whatever it was. And then they sent me to Camp Upton on Long Island. And there we got all our uniforms and everything else and shots and all this crap. And then they were supposed to have, what is it, basic training? I never had any basic training.
Really?
No, they sent me right straight from there to an ordnance company in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. A few other people with me, half a dozen. They couldn't believe it either. Some of them was, you never had any basic training? No, I don't know anything about it. So they put us in with a buck sergeant in charge of us, and he done the drilling and all that stuff, told us what to do.
So do you think they needed you so bad they didn't process you through basic training?
I don't
training?
Know what the heck. I never did figure that out. I don't know what the heck. They was an instrument man, you know, optical and watchmakers and what the heck was the other? Another machinist. There was six of us, went right into that company. I don't know why. I couldn't, and I don't think they could figure it out either. I don't know what it was. Well, anyway, we was in there. I was in there for, give me my 6 weeks or whatever it was, so I could march and pick my feet up. And then they sent me to Aberdeen, Maryland, to the proving ground down there. And I took a 3 months welding course in there. And while I was down there, the company moved to Boston. Well, you can imagine it's hotter than a blazes down there in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and you come up in here and it's about 20 below zero. It kind of gets your blood thinned out a little bit. Well, yeah, one time I remember we were out on bivouac, a three-day weekend bivouac, and it was so cold that in the morning when you got your breakfast, the eggs would freeze in the pan before you could eat them. So then I was in there for a while, and suddenly they come in and they say, "You're going on Kadri." You know what a Kadri is?
It is.
That's where you establish a new company.
Oh wow!
Why, I don't know. You gotta be a staff sergeant. So boom, I'm a staff sergeant, and they sent the whole Kadri to Camp Phillips, Kansas, out on the prairie. That's just, I don't know, I guess west of Salina, somewhere up in there. And, okay, we stayed all went along. I got frostbite and everything else from that. And they sent me from there. After a while, they sent me to Springfield, Massachusetts, to the trade school there for machinist work. So I was there for 3 months. I go back about out there again. And suddenly the old man says, "There's a colonel wants to see you up in headquarters." Okay, what the heck am I to do? So I go up there and he says, there's a captain down in Fort Leonard Wood. He's a crying for people. You want to go down there? I said, "I don't care where I go." So, yeah, about 2 weeks, they kicked me down there. Fort Leonard Wood, that's a nice place. I liked Fort Bragg, because you go into Fayetteville and the Circle Bar there, you're going to have refreshments. But they sent me, then again, all of a sudden they sent me back to Aberdeen, Maryland again for more training. And then we came back. We was there a little while. You got to go up to the where you get your clothes and everything there. We're going to give you training in Camp Hale, Colorado. That's where the 10th Mountain Division was training up there. We were supposed to back up the 10th Mountain. They give us all this clothing and stuff to stay out on the ground with, what do you call them? You sleep in it. You sleep in it.
Tent?
And gripe sake is, you put one layer on, and you put another layer on, and you put another layer on, and oh, great. We got all ready to go. Suddenly, take that all back to the supply sergeant. Take that all, we aren't going out there. We're going to Europe.
What was that feeling like?
I didn't care where they were going. Didn't make much difference what he's doing. But so we packed up and went to Camp Shanks in New York. Stayed there maybe a few days and went down, got on a boat, big, nice big boat. I guess they don't call them boats, they call them ships now. And we went to Marseille, France. We landed at Marseille, France. That was a funny thing. We come through Gibraltar at night on the British side, where the Gibraltar is. It was dark as could be across the other side. I think it was in Algiers or something like that. Lights are burning bright, just so there wasn't nothing going on. So we landed in Marseille, France. I think we got off that boat about, cleaned it about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That thing pulled out. That didn't stay there at all. And they bombed the port that night.
In Marseille?
Yeah. The Germans bombed the port. So you can see why they left. Yeah, they bomb it every night. They come down bombing every night. We were up on the... I don't know why they didn't bomb us, because we were right out in the open up on the flat up above the city. I don't understand why they didn't do that. Of course, they've done a lot of things I can't understand, but... And after a while, we had to stay there for 2-3 weeks till the boats came in with our trucks and equipment and everything. And then when we started up the Rhone Valley for Lunéville, France. That's where we finally wound up. And we get up the Rhone Valley a ways, and here's all this equipment laying alongside the road, the German equipment. They caught them in the front and in the back, and then they went over them. And it got rid of that bunch in a hurry. So we stayed all winter in Lunéville, and then the next spring, probably say March, we went into Germany. And we were in Germany when the war was over. I think it was we were barracked in a IG Farben place or something like that. Another funny thing, we come into a place, I don't know whether it makes much difference whether I talk about this or not, but here's Switzerland was neutral. Here's a family in Germany, Swiss family. Don't come near us. We're neutral. You can't touch us. You can't come in here. I wonder if they're neutral. And I heard later that the Germans, they knocked the teeth out of the Jews, the gold out of the Jews, and sent it to Switzerland, and they melted it down for them. And they were feeding them ammunition and this during the war, but they were neutral. I don't like this stuff. So that's that. I come back home after a while. They give me... You ever ride a 48 boxcar?
No, well, I don't believe I have.
You wouldn't have. And I just... they did that in World War I, you know, 48s. There were 40 men and eight horses. So that's what I got into. I come back to Le Havre, France, and got on one of these Victor boats and come back home. I didn't know anything at that day or that time. If I did, I'd wonder how I got here. My gosh, it was in March. That North Atlantic is really rough. So that's it.
Could you tell me about some of your friends while you were in the service?
I didn't... I had acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
Friends. I never thought much about friends because... that might have been for the infantry, but I wasn't in long enough in one place long enough. I was in three companies, so you didn't make too many friends. If you did, you forgot all about them, because you know I'd often wondered why some of them went, what happened to them. This one company I was in, the first one, the 32nd Ordnance, they said that went to North Africa. And I wondered if they got burned up, blown up in North Africa. I don't know. And this one that you were reading about, I guess you read about it in there, they were deactivated in Okinawa or someplace way off in the Pacific. So, but you had friends for a little while. I say friends, you acquaintances that you went out with and had a few beers and maybe went to had some spaghetti and meatballs and stuff like that with. But I didn't get fast friends. I knew that I wouldn't. You wouldn't keep them very long. You know what I mean? What else you want to know?
So, would you describe to me in a little more depth your company's assignments and duties while you were in Europe?
We were what they call a heavy maintenance field army unit. and we were assigned to the 7th Army.